the Rise Up See Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com, USA Today's NFL wire site covering the Arizona Cardinals. With me is my co-host Seth Cox from AvengeOfTheBirds.com, the SB Nation Arizona Cardinals site, and we are a week into training camp for the Arizona Cardinals. This is episode 448, so we have some takeaways, and that's what we're going to talk about in this episode. Buda Baker got a new deal, takeaways, what we've seen so far, and just a little bit more of other types. Kyler Murray addressed the media directly for the first time this offseason, so we've got a little bit of stuff to do. More shows that we're going to coming up, of course, but this is what we got in this one. Seth, how is everything going now that in terms of our personal lives with the football work and the other work, it feels like the crap's hitting the fan, not necessarily a bad way, but in a good way, because our kids are in school, work's busy, you're coaching. And football is back for the NFL, so content upon content upon content.
Yeah, it's just busy, and it's it's a fun time of year, but like you said, it's a lot of work and it's a lot of long days and nights, but it's worth it. Something, football for me especially, like, is something that is all consuming within my life, whether it's being at my kids' stuff or writing about it or coaching it or,
talking about it on here or on the original Draft Breakdown podcast.
Right. so it's just nonstop, and it's a lot of fun and something I really enjoy. So, as long as the nights may be, or as long as the days and nights are, stuff like this makes it fun and enjoyable to do.
And the college football season is coming upon us. And so you will have some, it's like pre-draft content coming up as the college football season emerges. But before that, we've got Cardinals in training camp. They reported a week ago. We did our preview last week. But the biggest news, we didn't talk about it late last week. We didn't get back on to get a figure out kind of a schedule to do the multiple shows. Buda Baker no longer asking for a trade. He gets a slightly new contract. It's not an extension, and it's not a significant raise. It feels like this was just what they needed. And why didn't they do this a long time before now, if this was the case, right?
Yeah, that's a fair question. I don't always pay attention to the media scrums. Did anybody ask Monty that?
I didn't. I do not believe so.
It's always interesting because that feels like the first question, right? Like, right. Hey, why didn't you guys just take care of this in
right? Because unless it came down to, hey, they tried back and forth, like, but this was like the bare minimum.
Yeah, that is fair. Like, what if this was like last minute, like, hey, I just want this guaranteed, and they were like, okay, we'll do that. So, I thought, you look at it, and it's something that you and I have talked about it quite a bit. It's not that we were anti paying Buda. We're always, always, always on the side of players and getting paid. But what we were, the question we were asking, I thought it was a fair one, was, at what value? What's the value? And if he was asking, and this was, all hearsay and nothing that we, nothing that actually was going on. If he was asking to become the highest paid player or highest paid safety in the NFL, then the answer was an easy no, right? Like, it was just like, I guess it was fun having Buda Baker.
Well, and it sounds like from what Buda said, I didn't go back through and listen to the entire thing, is that Buda really kept himself completely separate from his agent. He said, you handle it. And his agent probably said, don't do anything voluntary. And it perhaps, kind of like Kyler's agent caused problems, that it was his agent that was fishing for the big contract. When, now I know through sources of sources, Buddha was not looking for a major raise. Now there's some element to this, and we talked about it on this show, is the fact that, okay, if you're going to be in a bad team, you're going to go through another rebuild, then I either want to be compensated fairly, I want to be paid more, I commit to me financially, or trade me so where I can win. But I knew through some people who actually spoke to Buddha what Buddha was really looking for. He was looking for this year's guarantees. And what's crazy, what was so hard about that? Because we break down what the Cardinals gave him. $300,000 in a signing bonus. That's nothing for signing bonuses. That's the type of signing bonus they give like low-end free agents. They just guaranteed a salary this year now. And I've detailed why that wasn't necessarily necessary, but it's a good peace of mind for Buddha. There were protections in place already for Buddha when it came to that guaranteed salary, because the Cardinals weren't going to do him dirty like that. There was honestly no scenario in which they would have cut him before the season to have him lose out on all that money. That could it have happened? Yes. There's no way that would have happened. He gets
right, and that's just what felt silly about the whole thing. And I get it that, like, you want the actual, and this isn't just a bidwill thing. Like, you want the actual verbiage on a contract that, in case, God forbid, Tim Patrick is that the kid with the Broncos that, you know, fought back from an ACL injury and then blew his Achilles the other day. Like, you want that because, like you said, like,
And even in that scenario, guess what? Buddha would have, because they'd have put him on injured reserve.
Well, and
gotten
that,
all his money.
And that's my point. Like, it wasn't like they were going to do him dirty in any way.
Yeah.
Right. Like that would have just, especially because it's a new regime. Like, they probably weren't going to be like, oh, Buddha, you know, we'll let him clear injury waivers and then do a waived injury, you know, or clear waivers or whatever it is. And then, you know, so I don't know. It felt weird from both sides that,
yeah,
that it's happening. But to your point, you know, I've said it 100 times. That's David Mulugeta or Mulugeta or how do you say it? That's just his MO. But we're also seeing now, and it's funny that people got on Kyler and Kyler, because Kyler was the same way. Like, Kyler had nothing to do with any of it. Like, he was, you know, in the background and working out and doing his stuff. That this is kind of the new way that things are happening. We're seeing it with Jonathan Taylor. You know, we saw it obviously with Lamar Jackson, although he didn't have an agent, you know, he was doing it himself. You know, we saw it with DeAndre Hopkins. It's just, this is the new NFL. Things that usually or used to be private even 3 or 4 years ago are now messy. And the 49ers are dealing with it right now with Nick Bosa, right? Like, the Colts are dealing with it right now with Jonathan Taylor. Like, these things that used to be like, oh, no big deal, that's not happening anymore. And so it's just sad that, and I think you and I have been around enough, have heard about the hold-ins with players and heard about, you know, all this stuff that was happening that maybe wasn't as publicized before, that we're kind of numb to it, that the whole Buddha thing for us the whole time was kind of like, from both scenarios, both sides of it, we were kind of like, I don't really understand what's the big deal. Like, I don't understand what's going on. Like, the Cardinals aren't going to screw you and not compensate you if you get injured during off-season workouts or, you know, team participated off-season workouts or training camp. And then at the same point, you're like, why aren't you just guaranteeing his salary for this
right,
year?
Right, right. I know there's the element of the whole escrow thing, and that's a stupid thing. But ultimately, like, they didn't give him a raise. He didn't get a raise. He got this year's salary guaranteed. His salary next year doesn't change. He gets $300,000 to sign. He gets $400,000 a workout, basically incenting him to be part of the off-season program next year, kind of like what they've did with Kyler. He can get a $500,000 bonus each year by being named an All-Pro or to the Pro Bowl. You know, he's been to the Pro Bowl each of the last 4 years. So, and there's playing time incentive. So there's per-game roster bonuses both years. Basically, he gets $700,000 in new money just because he gets the signing bonus and the workout bonus for next offseason. And then you get another $1 million possible in Pro Bowl / All-Pro nominations or selections. And then you get the games played, the per-game active thing. There's, I mean, nothing there. But it gives Buddha more money. It guaranteed him. And now he's happy. This just feels like...
And again, it just feels like sometimes... And we don't know Monty yet, so, you know, we can't get on Monty too much, but it just feels like sometimes that they try to do stuff in the way of like, oh, well, we're just not going to deal or do that right now, right? Like, oh, we're not going to do that
salary. Last year's Kyler, they just didn't want they didn't want to do it that early.
Right.
Kyler was like, no, we don't want to set precedent for quarterback deal that early. But if you're going to get do the deal anyway, why didn't it matter when?
I know. And it's just such a thing. It's like, it's, I don't know. Sometimes it just feels like, I mean, and as married guys and as fathers with multiple kids, sometimes it's that thing of like, there's just that stubbornness, right? Of like, oh, well, they told me to do it, so I'm going to do it, but I'm going to do it when I want to, not when they ask me to. Oh, and you're like, really? We just can't, like, get this? Okay. All right.
But it's good. It locks them up.
Yeah, it's over and done with now.
It's done with. Now, we'll see about next year. And you know, for the Cardinals side, this was a no-brainer. Like, it didn't make any sense to wait on this because you didn't want to commit to anyone that long term, especially at that position. You just invested a little bit now to back up. And mind you, this was super important because it's to back up the words that they had about Buddha Baker all off season. If they're going to say how Buddha is like the epitome one, like if this has been over and over and over again, multiple coaches, Monty Austin Ford, you can't be that glowing about a player who is unhappy about his contract and then not take care of him in some way, because then that comes then it comes across as lip service, like you're saying this, but you don't believe it because you're not taking care of me. Because that's really, the nice words are nice, but when it comes down to the NFL, the only thing that really matters is the financial compensation. Because guess what? Because contracts are non-guaranteed for the most part, like the second you are not worth exactly that, you're gone is how that works. Unless you have the leverage in that situation. And now he's got guarantees and maybe we're going to have this conversation again next offseason, but we'll wait and see. We'll have to wait and see with that. But
it just seemed like a whole lot to do about nothing that we always knew was going to result in where we're at. And it just took longer and more articles that need to be written to get there.
Coming up next on the Rise Up Seared podcast, Mr. Cardinals talking with us. Talk about our early standouts and takeaways from training camp after a week. That's coming up next on Rise Up Seared. We're back on the Rise Up Seared podcast, Mr. Cardinals talking with us. Well, we previewed training camp. Now we have a week of practices. The pads came on Tuesday, so they had, you know, they had Wednesday through Saturday this last week, no pads. That was the ramping up period. They could have put pads on Monday after a day off. They chose to do a slower-paced one without pads to then lead them up to the full contact and ramped up juice on Tuesday. Now, I was at training camp on Saturday. I'll be there again this Saturday. The schedule that I now have, that I've had for the last 10 years at my first job, I used to be able to go to more, but I'm unable to. And I wish there were it feels like each year the information that comes out of camp from observation is less and less or less meaning. Like, I, when I go, like to see the playing rotations, who's getting the snaps and things like that, as opposed to standout plays. Because I know that Cardinals on Cardinals, a big play or a bad play could be contributed on either way. And so I don't know what to think. And
it just makes it really difficult because you're like, wait.
Remember Brandon Williams? He was a stud and he was terrible. I will say kind of the one thing that was surprising for me was that the cornerback rotation has been this. Everyone expected Marco Wilson, but are basically the number two and number three corners have been the rookie Keytrell Clark, the fifth-round pick out of Louisville, sixth-round pick, fifth-round pick, and then Christian Mathieu. That's, for me, that's been, because Mathieu, who was a guy drafted not by this regime, not this front office, not this coaching staff, and he's the one that's out there. So that for me, and while some people, one of my buddies was texting me, I saw Mathieu got cooked. I'm like, I don't know about that. I don't care that much about that based on what I've seen, because it could be for a number of things. But the fact that that Mathieu and Clark, and we're getting to see it based on, we're not getting a lot of insight about what Jonathan Gannon thinks about individual players, but we can see there's one player that he really has, really, you can tell that he likes, and that's Keytrell Clark, based on things he said. Everything else, he tries to keep it pretty vanilla. He can't help it with Clark.
Yeah, and I think there's two guys right now that have, more than anyone, really kind of stood out from a positive perspective. And we can talk about everybody. I mean, honestly, we always can. But, like, Greg Dortch has, again, lived up to the hype and looks like a guy that deserves to be getting a ton of playing time. But I tell you what, we said this from the time they drafted him, and I don't know if it's going to change anytime soon. Michael Wilson is a guy that just is different than every single receiver they have on the roster. And sometimes from a perspective, that is a good thing in their opportunities. But in this case, it's a good thing in that this dude is just, he just is, like, he loves to play. Like, he loves to be physical. He loves to get out there and compete. And he's got a little nasty to him. He's not the trash talk of like a Tyreek Hill, but he is very much a guy that isn't afraid to let you know that he beat you or that he made a play over you. And I think, with the undersized guys that this team has, that's a really nice change up and fit for this roster. And it's something I'm going to be, really interested to keep an eye on.
Yeah, for sure. I've been very intrigued by the fact where of all the stuff that they move around, the one unit that's been the same all through training camp so far, through like the last 2 weeks of the offseason program, is they have remained with the same five first team linemen, which makes it, all it does is suggest that their starting line, they're pretty set on, where you've got DJ, Elijah Wilkinson, Yelda Fruholt, Will Hernandez, Paris Johnson. I think there's one caveat that I think Froholt's spot, I believe, is the only one that has any sort of question as to maybe he won't.
Did I see correctly that John Gaines was getting some snaps in the other day as well?
I did not see him with first team, but Gaines was the number two center. Gaines has been number two center.
Behind. Yeah. I should have. Sorry. Let me clarify. He was getting snaps in while with McCoy on the side. Like, so not while they were doing warm-ups.
Yeah. So Gaines has been their number two. So that has been the second team center.
And so then, he gets some work in that way sometimes.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. And I saw it on the Twitter the other day, or the X, I guess we call it now.
I don't call it that. I still call it Twitter.
But yeah, so I saw that the other day and I was like, huh, I wonder if it like, and so that's the thing. And then, you know, we talked about the sign Pat Elflein. I feel like he is exactly what we talked about. Like he's like, all right, Froholt and Gaines aren't ready. All right, Elflein, you're in.
Yeah. Well, and it is interesting because the contract suggests that because it's a league minimum deal. He got a really small signing bonus and then he gets a roster bonus for making the roster. And so they're a guy that he looks like a guy like, okay, if we need him, just in case.
Yeah. And I think, like you said, the fact that the offensive line has been the same, it's something we've talked about before. Like obviously if there's a key glaring struggling player, you make the move, you make the change. But this early, and especially at this juncture, so much of it is based on continuity and getting to know each other and the little idiosyncrasies. I mean, I can tell you just from like a youth football perspective and a high school football perspective, like you would rather have five guys that love each other, trust each other and work very well together and for each other than you would have five guys that are just like unless they're just like all Trent Williams level all pro type of guys. Like you need guys that fight for each other and that trust each other, and sometimes that outdoes the like, oh well, you know, and I'm not picking on anybody, but like, oh, Josh Jones is probably more skilled than, you know, is it Elijah Wilkinson at left guard right now? Sorry.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. You know, Josh Jones is more skilled than Elijah Wilkinson, but like Humphreys and Wilkinson and Froholt might have a better rapport with each other. They might be more in sync and in tune with one another. And like, and so then that'll make up for the, you know, the shortcomings. And it's just something, you know, we even saw it, what, 2 years ago when Rodney Hudson was first, you know, and they're winning all these games. And those first four games before Rodney got hurt, like they looked fantastic. And then Rodney got hurt and all of a sudden it just became this.
The wheels fell off.
It just became this thing. It was like there was no continuity. Then Justin gets hurt again. And then, you know, and it just became a normal type of thing. And so, yeah, it's just, I mean, it's great to see. And then obviously the elephant in the room, it's awesome that Paris Johnson's just part of it, right? Like,
right. And that's like, there's no question. Like, he's been up there. And there was questions. And so, and it's interesting because, like, he's clearly, because it Beecham's, Josh Jones, they're not getting any first team reps.
Right. And so, you know, he's the guy. And it's exciting to see that and be excited about it and stuff. And so, you know, that's a good thing. I think, you know, other guys that have looked good, obviously, it feels like Isaiah Simmons is getting fit into that that role, you know, as the kind of deep safety, which is odd, but that athleticism and the ability to be a big body back there and make plays on the ball will, you know, play well. And I think it's kind of crazy what a veteran that knows a defense so well can do, just seeing Kaiser White, not even like the plays he's making, but just getting guys in line and set up.
This is like Jordan Hicks that first year, right?
Right, where they're just like, hey, this is what we're supposed to be doing.
But Jordan Hicks didn't know the defense. That's the crazy right. thing is when he came over.
But that's just linebackers. It's something we always talk about with linebackers. Like, there's an innateness to the position that outside of, you know, playing quarterback that, like, you just can't, you know, that doesn't go with all the other positions, and you can't train to do things. And you know, and White, being a guy that's obviously played in Gannon and with Rallis, you know, it's interesting to see. It's just been... I'll say this too, I'm interested to get your opinion on it because we have not talked about it. It's interesting the way they're running the camp because it seems like, and I know this is the plan, but it seems like, you know, they love going incredibly high tempo, like today, for instance, and then really pulling the stick back the next day and letting the guys, you know, do everything that they did the day before, just at, you know, half speed or 25% speed. And then, so they're still getting the reps. They're still getting the mental side of things. And then they're doing, you know, and then on Thursday again, they rev it way back up there and they're like, hey, go, you know, again, balls to the wall, go run through a brick wall for me. And just, it's because we haven't ever seen that before. Like, we've never seen the throttling back and like, we've seen them take light days, non-padded day, but like, just the juxtaposition. I'm interested, like, obviously we have no idea because it's the first camp, but like, what is your feel? Like, because it feels like, and obviously it's first time, you know, first year coaches and there's that bubbling excitement anyways, but it just feels overly different in a positive way. I don't want anybody to think I'm saying it negatively. Like, it feels overly different in a positive way.
You know what? It's allowing what it kind of is doing. I don't know if this is like this in other training camps, because the only training camps I've ever cared about have been the Cardinals. Guess what you're noticing so far? There aren't veteran days off so far. Like, Colt McCoy had a light day and didn't throw the one day, but they're not giving vets just days off. And I think the way they're doing
so they
ramp it up and they just bring it the intensity down. So everyone's getting the reps and they're still mindful of body and health. And I wonder if this is, how much of this is rooted in health science and in sports science and recovery with their new football performance department there, where you've got Buddy Morris there more for recovery, and then you've got all their other trainers and such. But it creates that message, because, you know, and with Bruce Arians like there, with Cliff Kingsbury, is that their veterans would be, they would slow roll them. Like, Rodney Hudson barely practiced. I mean, I know he was nursing a knee injury, they're trying to get him through, but fits sometimes. DJ didn't practice every day. But what we're seeing is everyone who is healthy is practicing every day. And then just, you know, this way you're still mindful of the players' bodies, which I'm pretty sure the players will appreciate greatly. And, right. Yeah. And getting the number of reps that you need.
Well, and it just seems like, you know, Marquise Brown, right? Like, he's a guy that's always kind of, hurts the wrong word, but he's always seems to be like nicked up and things like that. And he's in the drills, but, you know, and, or like when they're doing stuff, he's in there doing the walkthroughs or things like that. You know, he may not be doing the full bore stuff yet, but he's a part of it. And it's just like, it just feels like you said, like, it's different. It's not just guys working on the side or coming out halfway through camp, a camp practice and, you know, after rehabbing. Like, it's just, I don't know. It just feels really different.
Yeah. It's
I mean, and again, so we'll see. Well, yeah.
For me, it's just, it feels a little more intentional. I don't know. There's something I want to talk about when we get to the Kyler Murray part, but it feels incredibly in sync. Everything is in sync with what's happening. But yeah, I like that. Michael Wilson is like, now I've got a question for you is this. Are you worried about how Colt McCoy's looked in training camp so far? Because there's been days he's looked. Yeah.
I mean, it just doesn't look good, man. Like at the end of the day, it just does not look good. This is the question. And, you know, we're already kind of hearing the murmurs. What Greg Rosenthal was like, there's a non-zero chance that Clayton Tune could start game one, which means that there's a chance. And I feel like the McCoy re-signing was about like, hey, we need a veteran in here. But I don't think it was like,
was already under contract for this year. So he was re-signed last offseason before, like he was signed for 2 years. And then, you know, this was after Kliff and Keim had gotten their 5-year extension. So they were counting on Colt going to be there.
Right. And it's just, it just feels like this is so different. And, you know, we'll see how this all works out because they're just, it's just different this year. And I'm not sure if he's the guy, right? Like, honestly, I don't know, man.
I'm not worried because, and I've told this before, you know what I absolutely do not want any part of? Clayton Tune playing quarterback before Kyler Murray gets back. I have no part of that at all. And honestly, I don't care that Colt McCoy's looking bad right now. I don't.
Well,
I want to see what happens in the preseason, one. And two, whether he's good right now honestly doesn't matter because they're still all learning the offense.
Well, and two, I think the reality is we know what, and I think it's something that we've talked about 100 times. We know what Colt McCoy is. Like, we know who Colt McCoy is. So there's really not a whole lot of questions, right? Like, you know what you're going to get out of McCoy. So that becomes the question is going with the unknown of Clayton Tune a better choice than knowing what you're going to get out of Colt McCoy? Even in a different offense, it doesn't matter. Like, you're still going to get the same results. Like, he's still going to be a guy that's, you know, if he plays, let's say, 4 games, he's going to throw 3 touchdowns. He's going to throw 4 interceptions. Like, that's just, you know, he's going to be a guy that completes 62% of his passes and that can't, you know, misses some outside throws and makes some throws down the middle of the field where he can drive the ball still that you're like, oh, he does have a good arm. You know, it's just little stuff like that. Like, we know who he is. And so that's what the question becomes is what do you want? Or are you willing to take the unknown? Because that's the thing. We know that a Colt McCoy-led team can go 1-3 in those 4 games and have and it's not good by any means, but, you know, a 23rd to 25th ranked offense. What we don't know is if Clayton Tune can even get to that level. I mean, people don't realize how hard it is to play in the NFL. They're just like,
and to play like if Clayton Tune's a quarterback against Washington in that defensive front.
Well, and it's just everybody goes, well, look at, you know, they're always going to be like, well, look at the outlier, right? Like, look at Brock Purdy. And you're like, yeah, look at Brock Purdy, but like
Brock Purdy started playing midseason.
Right.
That's a big part of it.
Right, it is, and that's just kind of what it is. And, you know, it's just looking at all of this and seeing how it goes. And for me, I'm comfortable either way because I know what they're going to get in Colt McCoy, and I'm fine with it. And I am, you know, I always embrace the chaos. And if they want to, if they're like, hey, let's, you know, get crazy with this. You're like, all right, man, like the Cardinals are going to be the most interesting team in the league. Like they may be awful, but they're going to be interesting.
I think McCoy, even like if it's close, I still go with McCoy personally, because I think he's got the right mentality to steer the ship for Kyler's return. While there will, like, if Clayton Toon is even okay, there will be rumblings of, yes, he's our guy. Because fans are stupid. Like, we're dumb when the thing's like, he's yeah. And then we'll start talking about next year and training. He'd be like, it'd be like Davis Mills, almost, I think.
Right.
And Davis Mills did some okay things. He's like Davis Mills or Gardner Minshew, and those are even guys that have established themselves as being able to be productive. But yeah. Anything else of note that you kind of take away from camp so far? I don't know if I would say that I noticed in my one practice that I was there that you could say that there are any particular individual standouts. Michael Wilson has stood out, I know. And honestly, I like where Marco Wilson's head's at right now.
And he's going to be a big one, I should say, not a good one. It's just, you know, it's going to be interesting to see if those guys are coached up well by Jonathan Gannon or what the plan is. But he looks, you know, so far, like you said, whether they look good or not, it's not the question, right? It's how they're progressing and how they're starting to fit in. And you know, I feel like both him and even Christian Mathieu, to an extent, have had really positive steps so far.
Yeah. Coming up next on the Rise Up Series podcast, the best of our Cardinals talking with. Let's wrap this show up. Kyler Murray talked to the media. Let's kind of dive into some of what he said. That's coming up next on Rise Up Series. We're back on the Rise Up Series podcast, the best of our Cardinals talking with. Kyler Murray addressed the media, gave a lot of the things that we already heard. It was, you know, partially because there's been no games. Kyler was a good interview. He was more open, but there was also no loss that he's stinging about. There was nobody asking about his video games. There was one interesting question, and it was from Doug Franz, and he wanted to kind of clarify something, and he said he didn't want to misquote him, and he talks about being more coachable, and Kyler's like, whoa. And I said on the show, will continue to be coachable. and so there was a little bit of baiting there. Now, and it wasn't malintended. It was trying to get that out of the way. But there were some really, no one's kind of talked about it yet. And I was going to write it because I was going to go back and listen to it. There were some really interesting conceptual things that Kyler said that suggest vastly different things about two different coaching staffs over the last 2 years. Now, obviously the whole timetable not there. He's going to come, he's taking it one day at a time, which feels like the exact opposite of what he said in flight plan, where the goal was obviously week one. And people took that and ran with it. Of course he wants to come back and play week one as a competitor, but he knows he's not going to come back till he's ready. So, you know, he doesn't know when that is. He doesn't know when he's going to be able to start playing football, doing football activities. He rented to Joe Burrow. He says you can't rush it, but when you know, you'll know. I was really intrigued, though, about, and I didn't get to ask him specifically. I wanted to, but there was enough, I didn't get to ask it. I wanted to ask what were some different things that I wanted to kind of compare the two coaching staffs without not bashing the previous one. But there's one thing that stood out, is that he's really, really bought in to this coaching staff, because he said, basically, every said the communication and of expectations from top to bottom is perfect. And so there's no question about what expectations are. If when it comes to offensive concepts, like you see this, look, you do this, you do this, you do this. And there's like a level of accountability for at every level. If you miss a block, this happens. If you know, and there is communication about what everyone's supposed to do, and it feels like that wasn't happening with Cliff Kingsbury. Is that there was a large disconnect organizationally from top to bottom what was expected. Now, to some level, and we've said this, that Cliff was one who felt, okay, you're professionals, do your job, or we'll replace you. Gannon is process-oriented, and he said, no, everything matters. And I thought about it today, something he said, like, you know, he sounds a lot like Steve Wilks. He sounds a lot like Steve Wilks with perhaps a little more buy-in. I'm not sure what it is, but Steve
Wilks. A little more Bruce Arians, like.
Yeah, but Wilks talked up like, and players love him too, but he talked a lot, kind of the same thing, but then.
Well, and to be fair, too.
Lost the buy-in.
Right, but he's also had nothing but success outside of Arizona. So, is it really just, I mean, it might have been too much too soon for Wilks, and maybe it will be for Gannon as well, or maybe it won't, you know, that'll be something we'll watch. But, yeah, the process, the way things are going, to see Kyler's excitement level being here, is a complete 180 from last year. And it was just to the point where relationships sour, whether they're, you know, in life and in love, in business, whatever it is, like relationships sour. And I think that was something that happened in Arizona that doesn't just get discussed very much. And we can talk about and speculate on the root cause all day. The reality is the relationship itself had soured, and it feels like that Kyler's embracing the new relationships and they're embracing him back. And like you wrote about, you know, in June or May or whenever, or no, it had to be in April. 'Cause that's right. Mike Florio said it was a terrible thing for the coach and GM not to be planning for the draft. When Oklahoma unveiled his Heisman statue, you know, and how much that meant to Kyler. And it was a dig without being a dig at the old regime, right? Like, because he never felt like they had his back. Like, they talked a big game, but it's a different thing when you actually
Steve
have
Kime's no longer GM, and guess what type of reports are no longer coming out of the organization.
Right. And magic. So it's just, yeah, it's just, you know, one of those situations where I think you're seeing a guy that has matured as he needed to, but also is feeling like he's in a better spot with coaches who are willing to listen and have his input, but also push him in ways that the other staff didn't. It almost felt like, and I've watched a lot of the like 2019 to 2022 tape, it almost felt like that they couldn't decide on how to move forward. And so both sides were just kind of like, okay, we'll just do what we know works. And so they kind of just went back to, you know, the basics, so to speak, or what, you know, what had worked before. And that's where, you know, as a coach, Cliff needed to evolve. As a player, or, you know, as a player, Kyler needed to be pushed to evolve, and it didn't happen. And now, you know, and the results were the results, and now you're moving forward from there. So it'll be interesting to see if that plays on the field or if it's just, you know, lip service.
I've said this a few times. I don't remember if I've said it here on this show, but it's always felt like that Cliff was almost like just happy to have Kyler. Like he tried, like, for since he was a teenager, to get Kyler to be his quarterback, that he was just like, okay, thank you, Kyler, for being here. Do you. And Kyler's not that like, Kyler wants to be coached hard. He wants to be pushed. He wants to have specific expectations for him. And Cliff was like, I'm just glad you're here. Like, you're great. Now do stuff. Do stuff. Here's this. Take it. It's yours. Gannon is saying, this is what we want. They have a specific plan for him to be ready since he can't get physical reps. He talked about, and Kyler himself talked about how he's going through checks and calls in the mirror with himself. Like, I don't know if anyone else caught that. That's homework. He's doing homework at home, that he's doing that sort. And the things that they put in place, and these are all things that the coaches have established with him, and they've made it very clear what they want out of him. And so this is the plan. Let's do this. The fact that they are pushing him is exactly what he's needed. Like, Cliff wasn't very good about holding people accountable. Like, he would call players out. That was never kind of his thing.
No,
his coaching staff, and that ended up being a problem because they weren't winning. When you have a veteran, like, and you want the veterans to do it, but your coach has to establish that culture. And Gannon does that. And so, like, a guy misses a block, okay, he's going to get called out. Bruce Arians was really good about that. He had the accountability board. It was like everybody's mental mistakes and blown assignments was on display for everyone to see. Not to shame them, but just to create a level of accountability to say, hey, your mistakes matter to everyone on a team. And I just love kind of how they're setting things up. I don't know. I hope it's successful, and I hope it doesn't go as badly, because the way this is set up feels like if they get just a little bit of success, this is exactly what you need to build long-term success.
Yeah, and it was one of those things, too, that one of the biggest faults of Cliff Kingsbury is always going to be, and you said it, it's that he values relationships too much. It's funny, and I know Steve Wilkes was in the middle, but it's funny that they went from a coach who basically utilized 75% of the team as, or looked, viewed them as, you know, replaceable commodities, to a guy in Cliff who didn't know how to separate his affinity for the players to be able to coach them up, or put them in a position of having to be pushed and things like that. And it's just really interesting because it feels like Gannon, and again, this is based purely on 2 weeks of training camp. It feels like Gannon has that ability to find that sweet spot to be a guy who, you know, straddles that line a little bit better. And for a team that just desperately needs that, you know, they need their best players to feel emboldened to hold each other accountable and not feel like it's just a free-for-all, which is kind of what it felt like under Cliff. And it's not, you know, taking shots at Cliff or anything like that. Like I said, it was the best thing about him in 19 and 20, and it was the right coach at the right time, but it ultimately what led to his downfall, because unless you're winning, having that mentality or treating players in that manner is not the best thing, right? Like, you have to be able to reel it back in and hold them accountable. And once the, you know, toothpaste was out of the tube, so to speak, it was too late, right?
Yeah, it's just so interesting kind of the how Kyler's talking, the way he is. It feels like he's taking another step forward, but at the same time, he doesn't know when he's going to be back. I know I've been saying week one's not going to happen. I'm just really interested to see, is he going to come off PUP before, or if they're going to keep him on, had him be out for 4 weeks, then get him practicing, and then come back. You know, and I've predicted a week six return. That kind of feels kind of like the sweet spot right now, based on current progress and, you know, everything that he's doing, but he's taking it one day at a time. He opened up about, you know, like some of the things, like the first time, like he had to have a trainer bend his knee for him because he couldn't do it. Like there's,
and I can tell you that's a real thing. Like, oh, you're like, sure. That's as far as like, I mean, somebody that's blown out their knee and had done the rehab. Now, mind you, the surgery, all of that's much better than I did it when I did it 20 years ago. But, you know, the fact that you literally have somebody come over and you're like, this is as far as I can bend my knee. And they're like, no, it's not here. And then they push it and you're like, what are you doing? It's going to snap in half. And then you're like, oh, it can't go further. And, you know, it's just one of those things that you're just not used to. And so, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how he comes along and what he looks like and where he's at. But, you know, again, from everything we've heard, it's been incredibly positive.
Yeah. So it continues to be, I can't wait till he gets back. Whenever that is. All right, let's wrap this up, this edition of the Rise Up here at Podcast, Best of Cardinals Talk, and we'll have this episode 448. That's Seth Cox. I'm Just Root. Maybe we'll have another one. We got to get back in the groove of doing these, whether it's just me, whether it's Seth, whether it's bringing something else. I'm going to try and get, I can probably record a show on Thursday, whether we can get Seth. Because one thing we haven't done our divisional ranking show this year yet, so we need to do that at some point. So we'll figure that out. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. This is Rise Up Seared Podcast. Thanks for listening as always.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red Podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise Up Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up Sea Red.
Whoa!